This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
A report by Canada's correctional investigator Howard Sapers has found that disparities in opportunities and outcomes between Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal offenders continue to widen. Today, 23% of the federal incarcerated population is Aboriginal. The situation of Aboriginal female offenders is even more concerning. One in three federally sentenced women offenders are now Aboriginal. This represents an increase of 85.7% over the last decade. The Correctional Investigators Report has also found that healing lodges, which are designed specifically to be culturally appropriate for Indigenous inmates, are being underutilized. We're joined on the phone by Kim Pate, Executive Director of the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies.
Welcome back to People First Radio, Kim.
Thank you.
Kim, there's been a precipitous increase in the number of Aboriginal women in Canadian prisons over the past decade. What is happening?
Well, I think a number of things are happening. We've seen cuts to social programs and healthcare and educational services, all the ways that shore up the ability of those who are already marginalized or the poor or have less access to those services to gain more equality. And so when we see those sorts of things cut and we see people pushed more to the margins, pushed further into poverty, we literally see them dumped also into the streets and into prisons and as we know from the missing and murdered Aboriginal women issues, dying. And so I think we're seeing, as Canada has been eviscerating its social safety net, those who are more likely to be reliant because of historical negligence, state negligence, and historical disparity, are more likely to end up in prison because it's also the only place that can't say no to them. They can't say you don't fit our mandate. And we know that for people who are living on the margins or on the street, it's very easy to see them criminalized. It's also very easy to see criminalized people who are poor, who are relying on social assistance because of the inadequacy of those rates. And so we see increased numbers there. We also see, with the backlash to violence against women that has been being experienced for the past, really forever, but especially as we've seen changes to policies around mandatory charging and that sort of thing, we're seeing increased numbers of women being charged when they are reacting to violence or defending themselves or their children from violence. And we also know that many women plead guilty rather than risk believing that they'll get back to their children faster and therefore not interrupt childcare, other family responsibilities, accommodation, that sort of thing. It's not always true, obviously, because many of them end up in custody, but all kinds of reasons that happens. And as you'll know and your listeners will know from the Nanaimo area, Jamie Gladue's case was a really good, bad example of that. Here was a young woman who, it was described as having been in a jealous rage because her common law was having an affair, when in fact, when I finally had a chance to look through what actually happened and read the preliminary inquiry transcripts, this was a young Aboriginal woman who had been beaten, whose sister had just been raped by her, by the man she stabbed, and whose own father wouldn't leave the younger children alone with them. And so a very different situation than what was described and what was publicized about her case. So, we see all kinds of things, from historic discrimination on the basis of racial discrimination, to discrimination based on poverty, to the impact of trying to deal with violence themselves and sometimes anesthetizing themselves with violence and that resulting in those sorts of charges, or being, not even being treated fairly or protected when they've experienced violence and therefore being left essentially deputized to support or protect themselves and their children.
Now, the Corrections and Conditional Release Act has established some expectations for corrections in Canada. One is that correctional policies, programs, practices actually respect gender, ethnic, cultural, and linguistic differences and be responsive to the special needs of women and Aboriginal peoples, as well as to the needs of other groups of offenders with special requirements. Kim, give us a sense of what the Correctional Service of Canada has done to fulfill those expectations.
Well, they have developed healing lodges, predominantly for men. The very first one was for women, and it's on the Nikanit Reserve in Saskatchewan, which is and it's basically in the Cypress Hills, about 35 miles down a gravel road from Maple Creek. And then there are, I think, seven others for men. And just recently, in the last couple of years, they opened up in Edmonton through Native Counseling Services, what a unit that's called Buffalo Sage, basically a minimum security community-based unit. And so those are all good moves. The reality is, though, that the majority of women, Aboriginal women who end up in the federal system are classified as higher than minimum security. So paradoxically, when this Buffalo Sage unit first opened up, there were no Aboriginal women who corrections felt were eligible for that unit, and they then had to reclassify people. And it's part of the reason we have a, with women from prison, a human rights complaint in right now, again, against corrections. And I say again, because in 2001, along with Native Women's Association of Canada and Amnesty and, you know, 26 organizations, other organizations, we filed a human rights complaint on behalf of all prisoners, talking about the overclassification and the discriminatory treatment of women. And the Canadian Human Rights Commission found that they were, in fact, discriminated against on the basis of sex, race, and disability, particularly those with mental health issues. And now, in 2010, another group of Aboriginal women basically raised the same concerns again. And so Native Women's Association of Canada, the Disabled Women's Network, and ourselves have supported them. And now the Human Rights Commission has also supported a referral of this matter to the Human Rights Tribunal, recognizing that the recommendations they made and the observations they made when their report came out in 2003 have not really resulted in any significant change for federally sentenced women. So there certainly have been attempts. There are many good people within corrections trying to do the right thing, but the reality is there hasn't been a concerted effort placed on ensuring Aboriginal people, one, are kept in community and supported in community and have their needs met in community, and secondly, that they are returned to the community as quickly as possible. And that's contributed to by, you know, a classification system that is has racial and gender bias, as well as the results then of people being overclassified, therefore having less access to programs and services, and therefore less likely to get back into the community at the dates that, you know, generally they would if they weren't subjected to those kinds of limitations.
Tell us more about healing lodges. What are they? How do they operate?
Well, the healing lodge, so there are two different models that for women. There are only two examples at this stage, but the one, the Buffalo Sage, is really a minimum security, almost like a releasing center for Aboriginal. It's supposed to be for Aboriginal women, but there are also non-Aboriginal women there. And it's a smaller unit, more based in the community, and the idea is that women in that in Buffalo Sage have access to the community to start to do work placements, volunteer placements, maybe schooling, maybe reconnecting with their children or their families. The challenge is, of course, is only one, and it's in Edmonton. So if you're not from that area, you may not be able to really focus on your own reintegration in the same way. Although there have been, and certainly there's one young woman who has done very well reconnecting and going back and forth to her home community, her reserve as well, from there. Now, the Okemaochi Healing Lodge in near Maple Creek on the Nikanit Reserve is actually set up as a prison. It's a federal penitentiary and takes minimum. It was supposed to take all levels of prisoners. In fact, when it was opened, we were asked to not oppose them by the elders who were involved, and Native Women's Association asked not to oppose them putting in a segregation unit. They didn't call it a segregation unit, they called it a safe house, but it was essentially a segregation unit. And the reason they wanted to put that in was so that they could actually accommodate maximum security women. So the plan initially was that all levels of security of women should go there. And part of the reason for that planning was that the Vision Circle, the Aboriginal women who, from the community and from and the elders who envisioned that, knew that if they didn't allow maximum security women to go there, that many Indigenous women would be denied access. And in fact, the very ones for whom it was envisioned, the women who were at prison for women, would be denied access. And so that was the planning. However, that plan was never realized. And in fact, it has mostly only taken very low security and sometimes, people are in fairly short sentences, as well as some non-Indigenous women. So it's an actual penitentiary. Women serve their sentences there. There have been some excellent programs there. There was an excellent horse program where women were, because it's the spirit of the horse for that is the spirit of the community, the Nikanik Reserve. There were a lot of teachings and practical experience being gained on working with the horses. That was seen as expensive, though, so it hasn't necessarily happened on a regular basis. There were also some very good fasting not just cultural, but educational experiences and training, and some of those still exist, but much of the most beneficial work that was being done of women being taken out into the community has also been cut, sadly, because of cuts to resources, limitations on the ability of wardens to allow women to go on passes and that sort of thing. So, and they also had an excellent mother-child program and a whole child care center that was accessed by the community, and that also has been cut. So, there have been some very good initiatives, but unfortunately, not many of them survive.
Kim, we've run out of time. We have to say thank you very much for taking the time to join us. Something tells me that we'll definitely be speaking with you again on this to see what the impacts of the Correctional Investigators Report have been over time. Thanks very much for stepping out of your meeting and taking this call.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you very much for covering this.
Kim Pate is Executive Director of the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.